together with American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Elise Davis over a Zoom video. Elise was raised in Little Rock, Arkansas, and she talks about how she got into music. She used to write songs. It was totally a bedroom thing. Write songs and record them into a little karaoke recorder. Her friends found it. She was like horrified. They played it and were like, "Yeah, you're actually really, really good. You should pursue this." So there was a music teacher at her school that she would kind of work with after school and during class and stuff, who recorded her. And she tells this really funny story about the first time she actually went up and played live in front of her whole entire school, and the remix version this teacher put on the song that she wasn't expecting. So there's a funny story there. She talks about moving to Nashville, signing a publishing deal, putting out her first record, The Token. She tells us about the highlights of Cactus and the most played song on the record, not even being the single that she had chosen for the album, where she was during quarantine, and her brand new record that just came out, Anxious, Happy, Chill. You can watch our interview with Elise Davis on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. And it would be rad if you subscribe to our YouTube and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Elise Davis.
This podcast is all about you, your journey in music, and how you got to where you are now.
Cool.
So let's start off by just where were you born and raised?
I was born in Dallas, Texas. And at a young age, I moved to Little Rock, Arkansas. So I grew up pretty much in Arkansas from age like five on.
Oh, okay. Were you in actual Dallas? I'm just curious because I have family that lives in the outskirts.
Oh, nice. we were really close to like Southern Methodist University area. Do you know where that college is?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just know that like they were lived in like Plano. That's okay. All I know.
Close-ish, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just curious. That was So Little Rock, Arkansas, that's where you're mainly born and raised, yeah. I should say.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you're from there, like I have a love for it, but there's not like a ton to say about Rock. I mean, I love it. Yeah. I love Arkansas for different reasons, but yeah, that's sure. Where I grew up.
Was there like music scene there at all?
There is a little like indie scene there. And I was appreciative for that because I started playing out in bars and stuff when I was like 17 there and was accepted by some of the cooler, older indie people there. But that ended up being sort of my bandmates and playing with me for the years to follow into my 20s. So yeah, there's a cool little scene there for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. And how did you get into music?
When I was like 11, I knew that I thought I wanted to play drums. And so I got a drum kit and I started taking drum lessons, and I didn't think of myself as like a singer. I didn't think about songwriting or guitar even. And I wanted to form like an all-girl rock band with some of my girlfriends. And I had like gotten three of them to agree, and we all picked out each other's instruments and all that, and nobody stuck with it. And so then I was like, well, I can't like be in a band by myself with playing drums. Like it's hard for me to do things on my own playing drums. And so I started playing guitar. My dad had an old guitar laying around, and actually a blind woman who lived down the street from my parents' house is the one who taught me guitar, which was really interesting because
wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah. She was like in her 70s and was blind, and she would just give me like a chord sheet of to where my fingers would go. And then she would know if I was doing it right or not by the way it sounded.
By ear. Wow.
Yeah. It was really, really cool. But after I learned like 10 chords, that was really all I needed. And so I had never thought about songwriting or anything like that. But when I was 12, I wanted to go to see the band Bush in downtown Little Rock. Okay. And really, I just wanted to hang out with like 17-year-old boys and smoke cigarettes and drink beer. I was like, from an early age. My parents said I couldn't go, and I got so upset at them that I ran away from home, and I like ran down the street really and I was just like loving the idea of them thinking that I was like, or worrying about me or whatever.
Sure.
And like an hour passed. I remember like getting cold and like needing to pee and being like, oh, I'm just going to go back home. So I went back home. Nobody had noticed I was gone. Like nobody like cared at all that I had left the house. So I went up to my bedroom and my guitar was sitting on the bed. I'll never forget this moment. And I picked up the guitar and I locked myself in my bathroom and I wrote this song with like three chords called Big House, like about feeling alone in a big house. And I had never thought about songwriting. Like it was just this thing, it just happened. And I like right when it was done, I remember feeling like emotionally better. I remember like it kind of like let out some of that like angst that's so built up when you're like a preteen, sure. Emotional. And I was instantly addicted. So from then, like, and it was this kind of secret thing, because I didn't think that I could sing or anything. It was just something I found was like really fun. Mm-hmm. And so I started coming home from school and I'd immediately go up to my room, sit, lock myself in my room and write a song like every day. And I really just never stopped.
Wow. And when did you have the courage to really show people what you were up to?
So this is so funny, because I don't even know if I'd really, I mean, I could probably figure it out, but I had this tape cassette that was from like a karaoke. This like dates me a little bit, but
I get it.
You could track yourself on a tape recorder thing, but it was
right,
like a
karaoke
box. So I had like been recording myself for about a year, like writing these songs, and they probably sounded horrible, but, and I still thought it was going to be this kind of secret thing. And I had some friends over after school one day. And I remember I went downstairs to do something. And when I came back in the room, they were listening to it. They had like found it and I was like mortified, because it was this secret thing.
Yeah.
But then one of my best girlfriends was like, I'm telling the guitar music guy at our school. And so she told, like, encouraged me to tell him. And he was like a hippie guy in his early 20s. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I really want you to sit with me and show me these songs. Like, just us, you don't have to show them to anybody. Which was really cool. Cause I like, it was something that really just kind of pushed me more. He eventually was like, got his other guy friends in their 20s and they played out in bars with me some, and he encouraged me to play in front of my school. And that's how I kind of started playing out.
Oh, wow. That's quite the encouragement. Yeah, just go ahead and play in front of all your peers. Well, you know, no big deal.
Process. Actually, there's a funny story about that too.
I want to hear it.
What we did for several months was like, he would just record me. I'd stay after school and he'd record a guitar vocal of my songs just to try to get me used to doing that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, told me one day, he was like, I'm going to like mess around with one of these if you're cool with it. And I was like, totally. And so I was 13 at the time. And this song was called To Be the Woman. And it was like this sassy rock song. And the chorus was saying, now that you're gone, I'll move on and I'll be free to be the woman that you never let me be, which is like hilarious to think about. The recording is, I don't know if I can cuss on this, but I was gonna
you can
say.
Cuss. Yeah, you can say whatever hilarious. The hell you want.
So then there was a pep rally at my school. And so there's like, 500-600 kids or whatever. And at the end of the pep rally, he did not tell me he was doing this. I was sitting with my older brother and all of his friends who were like kind of bullies to me anyway. And he was like, and your exit music is from our very own Elise Davis. And he had added a techno beat to my song and made it like full on techno song. And so it's like my like voice saying To Be the Woman still to this day. Like my brother's friends like died laughing. I would turn bright. I was like, I cannot, he like did not ask me.
Yeah, wow.
I know, in front of the whole school. He thought he was like doing something like that I was gonna be really excited about. He was like not with ill intention, but still to this day, like my brother and his friends will be like, To Be the Woman. They like make that song.
My gosh, so you didn't even know he's gonna change it to this like techno song until you walk out on stage?
No.
I'd be pissed. I'd be like, really, this is what you're gonna do to me on this?
Well, I had with him for a while, like, and I was pretty open, like honestly, like I probably, if he had played it to me like on my own, I would have been like, okay, cool. But it was like the fact that it was like to the whole school was what I was so embarrassed by. But he had told me he was going to mess around on it, but I did not know that meant like a full-on techno song.
He's like, gonna mess around and just throw this whole techno beat behind it. It'll be great.
Yeah, I like a guitar and a harmony or something.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh my. Okay. So that was your first, was that really your first experience playing live?
That was
live
my first
in front of
recording
you?
Debut.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's a lot of people might have been like, okay, well, now everybody
never again.
Know, yeah, I'm never gonna do this again. Like, how did you carry on? Like, you just said, I don't really care. I'm gonna keep playing.
I mean, I was really embarrassed by that incident, but I was already like too far gone addicted to music. Like, it really, ever since that first day that I wrote that song, it was like something like about my mental health and my emotions with songwriting. It's like that nothing could change, that I had found this thing that was like the greatest thing I'd ever known.
Yeah. And then, so you released your first full length record, The Token, but you had some like recordings prior to that, right? Like some EPs.
Yeah. Like, I released like my first album when I was a senior in high school. I had a band called the Sandbox Lizards later on in like eighth and ninth grade. And we released an album and then all throughout college, I released like an album a year. I was always releasing music, but it was like crappy recordings that I barely had any money to record ever. And so I would just like get favors of friends and record and just throw them on iTunes. And so The Token was like my first album that like I put out in a professional way and recorded with a producer. And like, so I view it in my life as like my first like official album, and all the other ones were kind of like practice.
Sure. Like little demos, so to speak. Yeah. So were you were playing, you said you had a band. How long was the band together?
I had a band with me and four guys, and we were called the Sandbox Lizards. I honestly don't even know why we named our band that. But we were a band for like 3 years, and we played in like Battle of the Bands and stuff around town when we were like 16-year-olds and stuff. So it's like, even though I would be like not super proud of those recordings, probably, like I've always been really grateful for the fact that I was doing those things at those ages, because you kind of get that out of your system and you get used to playing live and all that from a young age. I think it's just helped so much for when you're doing it like for real later on.
Yeah, kind of shaped you and like got you like in front of people in that whole experience.
Yeah.
And then did you go to college? You said you talked about going to college and putting out more songs. Did you go for music, or was it that just kind of something you passionate about?
It was just like my parents really wanted me to get a degree. And so I was like, I'll just do it. And so I actually went to a couple years of college in Dallas. I didn't really like the music scene there. And then I transferred to the University of Arkansas. So I was back with my band that I had played with before. And we would tour on the weekends, just like Arkansas and Oklahoma kind of things. And and I would play a lot in my college town in Fayetteville, Arkansas. But did I answer the question? I got it.
Yeah, you did. Well, so then does that take us to that first record?
So after I almost graduated college, I didn't quite finish. It was 2010, which is so crazy how long ago that was now, but I got my first tour that was like to California and back. It was like the longest tour I'd had. But I had this like one class that I needed to do to graduate. And I just didn't do it. And I went on the tour. And during that tour, I realized that I wanted to move to Nashville. So I had never been to Nashville before. I just knew I needed to get out of Arkansas. I had a band in Arkansas at the time. And there was a lot of like, some people had emotional feelings more than others for me. And it got all dramatic. And so I just packed up and moved to Nashville. And within that first year, about a year of being here, I got a publishing deal. And then I wrote for that company for like probably about a year and a half. That was around the time I got together the recording The Token. So it was kind of like, it was like after college, I went to Nashville. I'd been writing like as a salary paid songwriter on Music Row for a little bit. Then I went to record The Token.
Wow. Okay. Well, I want to go back a little bit here. So I'm curious about this tour. How did you land this tour to California? And was it just you? Like, did you just tour solo were there other bands in this tour? Like, what was that like?
So there was this woman in Dallas that had approached me, like, so I was like 20, almost 21, and said she wanted to try and get into booking. And she was this woman who had lived in Dallas and had been listening to my music for a couple of years. And I had never had a booking agent yet. And so I agreed to like try it out with her. So she would just book me on these things that were like, And so she's the one who booked that. But it's like really funny because one of my shows was, I'll never forget, this was my first time playing in California, which I thought was just super cool to like be playing in LA, you know?
Yeah.
But it was in, one of them was in an Indian restaurant. And I remember there was like two people there. There was like not even a stage. There was just like a microphone in the corner.
They just moved like a table.
and so, yeah, that tour, it was in all these random little, you know, small bars kind of out there and back, but that the ones in California, it was like fun for me to say I was playing in California, but that was like the kind of deal that I was playing. One of them was a pet shop that I played in, I remember.
Wow.
On the way. I don't even remember what state it was in.
That's funny.
That was weird.
Yeah. That's cool though. I mean, probably to think back and like how funny you just rolled to a pet shop.
Yeah,
you're like, totally, oh, this is interesting. Where in else? What, I'm from California, actually. Not
oh, okay,
are you
cool.
still are you still in Nashville?
I am, yeah.
Okay. We just my family and I just moved here like a month and a half ago.
Oh, nice. From where?
San Diego, California. That's why I'm curious. So where in California did you ever play San Diego?
I haven't played. I've played in San Francisco and LA, and I want to say those are the only times. But I've played in like
more, the major markets.
Yeah, more actual. But I've played in like not Indian restaurants. I've played in better places.
Right, right, of course. But, very cool.
I can't even remember the names anymore. It's weird because I haven't been on tour for a year. I mean, nobody has, but like, it's like weird. Like I'm just spacing on even like the names of where I've played because it's been such a weird year.
Right, right. Of course. Okay. So you decide once you get back from that tour, like, okay, I want to move to Nashville. I want to like really, you know, pursue this as a dream. And that must have been huge to get a publishing deal. I mean, how many people move here wanting that? And I would guess the percentage of people that score a publishing deal has got to be like 1%. I mean, I have no idea, but well, it doesn't seem like it's that. It sounds like a big achievement in my opinion.
Like looking back on my history here now, I'm like, that's like something that was a huge part of shaping like so many things that led me to so many other things. But I had never co-written before at the time, nor did I, was I really interested in it. And I remember I was like waiting tables in two restaurants right when I got there. And like, there's all these other songwriters and everyone would always say, we should write together sometime. And I remember just always being like, no, that's so weird sounding.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know what a publishing deal was, nor like, I was after a record deal, someone to fund my records.
Mm-hmm.
And, But American Songwriter and Martin Guitar was putting on a songwriting contest and you just had to upload an MP3. It didn't cost anything. One of my friends was like, you should just do it. And so I did it. And then I kind of forgot I had done it. And I kept getting these emails from them that was like, you're in the top 500. You're in the top 100. You're in the top whatever. And I don't know why. I look back, I'm like, why did I ignore that? I remember thinking like it was not like real or something. Like it was like,
yeah, is this some spam, like, bot thing going back? Yeah.
And then like American Songwriter had to like reach out to me being like, hey, like you're in like the top five of this thing now. And there was like 1,000 people in it and you're the only one who's not responding. And I was like, oh, this is like a real thing. And,
wow.
And then I ended up winning it. And so then that was it.
You won. Wow. Well, this podcast is affiliated with American Songwriter. So I think that's really cool that that's how it came through. But that's funny that you're ignoring it. I would think the same thing though. Like, what are you trying to do? Give me the sign up for your subscription to your magazine or something?
Yeah.
Like, oh, now I'm top 100. Oh, sure.
Right. Yeah. That's like where I remember like thinking that about it. But yeah, American Songwriter, my record came out today and they did a review of it. And the guys who were there, I mean, that was 10 years ago. So it was like, it's like different people there now.
Yeah.
But I told him the story. He was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that either.
That's that was so cool. Well, I'm curious now. So you submitted a song and then you got top five and then what they did like another, like a battle of the bands. You guys would all perform. And how did they choose the winner? Like, how did you win?
Gosh, it's like a little, like I maybe had to submit another song like right at the end, but there was like, you know, Hunter Hayes, that like country guy, he mm-hmm. was like, so it was like him and like a couple other like successful musicians who were the judges of it in the end. So it was like, I don't even know how they whittled it down. I'd have to like remember it, but I think maybe we had to submit like one more song or something. There was no performances or anything, but it was like, so then I won this publishing deal that paid me $20,000 a year. And they would just set me up on co-writes like four or five a week, being like, go to Universal this day, go to Sony this day. And so I was like 22 at the time. And I was like, I didn't want to co-write, but when I realized that's what it was, I was like, hell yeah, I'll co-write.
Right, of course.
Like I got to quit my restaurant jobs. And but from there I wrote for that company. It was just a year long publishing deal, but I wrote for them for 5 years. And then it led me to my next publishing deal and the one after that. And like, so it was just like this thing that really shaped my years to come in Nashville.
Wow. So yeah. So winning that contest really, I mean, opened the doors for you. I mean, then you're in the rooms right now. It's like you have the seat at the table and you can kind of meet these people and try to navigate your career that way. Wow. Yeah. And then, so how many years later after you won the contest, did you put out the token? Was that after some years as a writer?
So I got that publishing deal. I think it was like 2013 and the token came out in 2016. But I recorded the token in 2015, but it came out a year later. But I'd been writing there for a little bit and I like released an EP in my first year there. But again, like I didn't really like promote it much or anything, co-writing itself too, like was a huge thing that I'm really grateful for in life now, because even though it's not my preferred way to write, like I feel like it's something that really helps you grow as a songwriter, being in those uncomfortable ones and then randomly meeting like the ones that you do vibe with and all that. So I was glad that I got to do that for a while before I made the token, because there are several co-writes on the token. Like I met this one guy through co-writing named Clint Wells, who ended up for like 5 years. He and I wrote all the time. He's like one of the main people I wrote with.
Okay.
So yeah, like I ended up meeting some, but out of like the 500 people I've written with, there's like three that I maybe still want to write with.
Okay. Sure.
But I'm just weird about it. I just like to write by myself mostly, I think, but.
Yeah. I'm curious on that. Cause you answered my question that I had in my head about if you had co-writes on the record, because you said that you hadn't co-written with people and that that's all you're doing pretty much if you're in this publishing deal. So you did have some co-writes with that first release.
Totally. Yeah. That one guy, Clint Wells, and I, like he was the main co-writer. There's like two other people on that first album, but then my album after that, it was the co-writes were pretty much just me and him.
Cactus, is that the record you're talking about?
Cactus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But then this one, I actually ended up kind of going back to my roots and writing most all of it by myself. There's like two older songs on there that were co-writes, but that's like what's really nice to me about the record that came out today. Like there's something that just feels like very personal about it, because they are all like pretty much like so solo written. Mm-hmm. Which I like both. Like I don't think one's better than the other. It's just they're just different.
Sure. Like when you write a song in a co-write situation, do you have like I've asked this to quite a few people because it's fascinating to me. Like, do you have a song like ready that you're like, okay, like I'm willing to pitch this? Or is it like, do you write songs and you're like, there's no way I'm going to take this and show it to anybody. I'm going to take this and I want to put it on with Cactus or I'm going to put it on Summertime or whatever.
Yeah.
Or not Summertime, but the new record.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, is that a thing that runs through your mind or is it just kind of like in the moment?
I think, and this might make me sound like snooty and I don't intend for that at all, but like it depended on the co-write. Like if it was someone, if I was writing with like a guy who had like, you know, like 10 hits on the charts in his year, you know, I would want to have my best ideas prepared. But if I was like paired with like a 17-year-old girl at Sony who'd like never written a song in her life and she was just beautiful and had gotten a record deal and I was supposed to like write a hit for
her. Hit for her.
I would kind of go in there and like, in those instances, I wouldn't bring like my personal ideas that I was excited about. So it just kind of varied.
Yeah, I don't think that's new. I think that's smart. I mean, I mean, that sounds bad me repeating it, but yeah, like, it's like, why would you not bring your A game best material to someone that's already, you know, wrote, you know, 10 hit songs or whatever?
Yeah, maybe I'd have more money though if I had like written a really good song for one of those girls who had like a label pushing it for $1 million or something.
Right. And then it lands on TikTok and then the world changes. But I'm curious on that Cactus record. You have a song on Spotify that just is, over almost 2.5 million plays.
I know it's so weird how like one song, you're just certain songs, but it's all playlisting. Like that song got on a lot of playlists, and it's so funny because I released like four or five singles from that album before it was out. None of them were that song. So all the ones that like I predicted could be good for playlisting, like didn't do that. And so it's just funny that, and that's happened to me with like all my records really. But yeah, it's just like, you never know. But it's also like the music industry is just so wildly different now. It's all about playlisting.
No, it really is. And what fascinates me when you said that is I figured it would have to be a hit, like, and not a hit, but it would have to be the chosen single that somebody would seek out and be like, oh, like this would be great on this playlist. But the fact that somebody dug through your album and, you know, listened, like was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then listened to it all the way through and found Last Laugh and was like, oh, this will be great on a playlist. Like, that's pretty cool. I mean, that must be pretty validating knowing that it's not the song
one we pushed or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
It definitely like has changed my mindset about it. It's just picking singles has always been so hard for me because like I can think one thing, but it's like just music is so like objective and like people interpret it. You know, someone can love one song and another person hate that song, but love another one. And it's just kind of like, and also that one didn't even get on all these playlists until after the album had been out for like a little while. So it wasn't like even during the time where I was doing a lot of promotion for the release, it just like organically happened later on. And so that's kind of cool too, to know for anyone releasing music, like if it doesn't get on something right away, it still could later on.
Right. Yeah. That's super encouraging. And I'm just fascinated by the fact that the song was found and it wasn't like, okay, we're going to push this as a single and then I'm going to do all this press for it. And then like somebody was digging deep into your catalog and found that and was like, hey, this is a great song. And I think it would fit really well on these playlists. And, you know, 2.5 million plays later, here we are.
Yeah. Whoever that was.
Okay. Well, so that record, you have a new record came out today, which is awesome.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you about where you were when this whole virus hit, and was this record done then? Was this recorded all during quarantine? Where were you, you know, March 10th?
Yeah.
You know,
funny
right
you
before
say that day.
Well, because I think it all shut down on the 13th. So I'm just going to go with like a few days prior.
Well, I mean, so I had known like in January, February, I had been making the plans for recording and the plans all along had kind of been to record in April, but I was still kind of figuring out the exact song list and stuff. But I got married on March 7th.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But it's like a really funny thing. Cause my wedding, like I had just like 100 people and like got hammered drunk. My husband and I like couldn't even walk at the end of it, but we just like danced our asses off. It was like a party.
Right.
And everyone remembers my wedding as like the last time before we knew like of this different world, because it was like,
interesting.
So we went on our honeymoon that next day on March 8th. And like, we were like it was like just when it was starting to be like on the news, like, oh, this is coming to the US, but we were like, oh, it's okay, I guess, you know, like nobody had ever like thought about masks yet or any of that. But luckily our honeymoon, we had chosen to go out in the desert in Arizona, and we just like smoked a bunch of weed and drank. And he's working on his feature film right now. So he was writing his own thing. And I like, we would like separate, and I was finishing writing all the songs for the album. But like all this stuff on the news was growing more and more. And by the time we were like in the airport coming back from our honeymoon, it was like dead in the airport. It was like really eerie and strange. And Nashville,
like, nobody
was really
on your
weird
plane stuff.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And then we were like we contemplated even driving back because of all the things we were seeing on the news, but that would have been like a 24-hour drive. And like, we would have had to pay for all that gas and hotels and in between. And so we flew back. But so then by the time I was recording, like a few weeks after that, Nashville was completely shut down, and we had planned to do like, I like to like bring bands in and everybody kind of rehearse the songs and hang out and stuff before figuring out like what the actual track is going to be. But we had to really change the way we were going to record it. So it ended up just being me and my producer, like basically the whole time, except for drums on one day.
Whoa.
But I would go to the studio, and he has like four little kids. And so he was really nervous too. And so we would both wear masks. And like this area of Nashville where we recorded is where there's like clusters of studios, and there's usually cars everywhere, all this traffic to get to it, as well as like people everywhere. And there was no one. It was just like a ghost town. And we would wear masks. I would slide by him to get to my little vocal booth room. And then we'd talk through headphones in the glass the whole entire album. Like even when the day of drums, it was like, we did the same routine and the drummer was in his little thing and we all talked on headphones. But that was just like really different than any way I'd recorded before. And also like, I don't usually play guitar on my records just because I live in Nashville and there's like the most amazing guitar players all yeah, over the place.
And especially since you've been in the publishing world, I'm sure you could be like, oh, like, hey, so-and-so. Yeah. You are a shredder. Why don't you play my record?
Yeah. Like even like rhythm, like I'm definitely an adequate rhythm guitar player, but I'm just always like, this guy is amazing. I'm going to let him. But so I ended up playing a lot of guitar on the album and stuff too, because if we weren't bringing other people in and that, like my guitar is like, I can hear like they're slightly out of tune and my rhythm is not exactly perfect, but it's like little things I love about the record actually, because I really can hear like me playing the songs. That was kind of like an unexpected thing that I ended up liking, but the whole process of recording was like, we had to change it all and to work around the way the world had changed.
Sure. Sure. And then at that point, like you have this record now and yeah, like, I mean, when you were recording and everything, like it was like, oh, you know, in 3 weeks, we're going to flatten the curve. And I haven't heard that saying in nine months. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so you finish this record and then like, do you hold on to it for a while? And is it kind of like, okay, now I can't tour. What do I do? And then you also got signed to Tone Tree. Was that prior to the record coming out?
Yeah, I did my last record, Cactus. So I've been working with them for a couple of years.
I wasn't sure that I didn't know that that record was on the label as well. Okay.
Yeah. I think he's like become more of a label in the last, like since that, cause he was more like looked at as sort of like a playlister than a label person. Now they really are like an official label, but
yeah, I've interviewed a handful of people that are, you know, signed to the label. That's what I was curious.
Yeah. Yeah. Sean's great. He really loves songs and like genuinely like wants to help artists, you know, it's cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's awesome.
But yeah.
My question was just like, now you have this record and do you wait
to
put it out? Like,
yeah, that was really crazy. I mean, the plans kept changing and changing because nobody knew. And my booking agent and manager and I would have these discussions, but then I could slowly see like my booking agent was kind of like, as it kept going, like her whole world was like super changed around. And like, so she didn't know what to say. And like, none of us really knew what to do. And so, but we finally just figured it out. But it definitely, and any artist releasing music last year, it's like, it was like this juggling thing. And that, like, I have friends who would they would push something back because of whatever reason. And then like, there would be like a Black Lives Matter, like event happening or like some big, like all these different things that were happening in the news, even outside of the pandemic, like just with like politics and different things. And it was just so crazy. And the news was so full of all that like, it kind of was really hard for anyone to release anything because people were reading about that. I don't know. It was just really weird time.
Right. Yeah, there was so much happening at that time.
Yeah.
And then do you like, so the record was complete, but you know, now you put it out and there's like a light, hopefully. I mean, Bonnaroo is happening apparently in September.
Seeing that certain festivals and things are happening, and I did get vaccinated, even though like, I feel a little weird about taking a rush vaccine. I did do it. Did you get vaccinated?
I have. I've only, my wife like literally today got her second shot. Only had one. So I haven't had the second one. I'm in that window where I'm like waiting, but
did you do Pfizer or Moderna?
Pfizer.
Yeah, me too. And I got the second one last Saturday and I felt like shit all Sunday. Like it felt like I had like a really bad hangover. But then what was really weird is that then I woke up on Monday and I was like completely normal. It was like really bad for like a full 24 hours. I mean, like I just like I had body aches and a really bad headache and I like didn't want to do it. So like don't plan anything the day after.
I know. I was telling her and she's like, it's funny that because like I'm telling you hours ago, she got it. And I'm like, how do you feel? She's like, I'm nothing, like nothing's wrong. And I don't know if that's how you felt. And
I felt fine. It was the next morning when I woke up, I felt fine all that night. I even like, maybe this is a bad thing to do, but I like had a couple beers.
Yeah.
I was like living my life like normal.
You're like, well, this is nothing. And you woke up and you're just dead.
I mean, I just had like a headache and these weird like body aches. And I just felt so tired. But like the worst part was like this headache. And they tell you not to take Advil or anything because your immune system is like getting used to the thing and you're suppressing or you're doing something with your immune system by taking Advil. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people still take it, I think, but I didn't. And I just like, it was just a really like crappy day, but I was like wondering if that was going to be for a few days or something. And I like woke up the next day, like as if nothing had happened. It was
really that's crazy. Good to know. Well, yeah. I'll have to pass information on because my family had the other one, the Moderna one. And they got super sick the second time for like 3 days, like
yeah, fever, I've heard that happen,
like really bad. And then they're in San Diego, and like so I was like, oh, I'm gonna go with the other one.
I've had a lot of friends who've had Pfizer and they've said similar things to what I went through too. It was like one day after that you felt bad and then it was fine.
Okay, that's good to know. We'll have to prepare for that for tomorrow.
Yeah, just plan your day to where you don't have to do anything if you can. I don't know if you have kids or what.
But. I do have kids too, and one of them, and I'm the coach of the T-ball team, which is going to be
on the day after.
Tomorrow, yeah, we have a game.
But after you get your shot, though, or
No! I'm saying for her, So tomorrow it'll be just me. I guess sounds like
maybe she won't have the same experience I did. I don't, who knows?
Knock on wood. So we'll see. Well, I want to hear about this new record. So you recorded it over the course of quarantine and kind of a odd situation. How about putting it out and like. How do you feel about this kind of weird gray area that we're in?
Yeah. It feels really nice today to like, cause I mean, it's so weird when you release a record and especially since there was all this weirdness about putting it out, it's like, I've recorded another EP and I have like probably 5 tracks for the next album that I want to make just kind of like building. So it's like, I'm always creating because it's what helps me maintain like happiness in life. And so it feels really nice to have this out because I'm like, all right, so that's out there and that's, and so today is always like a nice day for that reason. The putting it out part, what was such a bummer about it is like, usually I'm like on tour the whole time that I'm releasing things and I'm able to like tell the stories of songs on stage and get feedback about them and feel like crowds and selling the merch on the road and doing all that. And so to like have everything be totally digital was kind of hard for me just like personally, cause I was so used to touring, but at the same time, it was like positive to still be able to be releasing something when I wasn't able to do anything else. So pros and cons.
Do you usually do like kind of like a release party, so to speak? Like, were you able to do any?
My band and I'm trying to figure out right now, possibly doing like a Nashville album release show sometime in the next few weeks, but we like keep talking about different things. And then there keep being these hurdles, when it comes to venues. So I've been thinking about like renting out an Airbnb and just like trying to do some sort of like real indie, like,
oh, that's cool.
Bucks and I'll have a keg of beer or something. But even that is like, even though people are beginning to get vaccinated, it's like still feels like weird to really push something like that right now. It's like, I kind of want to be like I just want to wait like maybe like a month or so more before I'm really pushing things.
But yeah.
I just don't know. Honestly, I'm just really just trying to figure
maybe
out.
Wait till, cause I think Bonnaroo is like beginning of September. So if they're just going to go for it, I mean, that's like 4 days with Lizzo yeah. and all these other huge artists, like totally. If they're gonna go for it, then you can be like, you know what, well, they did it, so I'm gonna do something.
Yeah, I know. I think I also want to like get out and go to some shows, and because I haven't really been doing anything, so I want to like kind of feel, because I've had a couple friends who have played shows in Nashville, because that's starting to happen here. And even like, it's apparently getting better like week by week, but it's like still like the rooms are like split up with all these empty spaces, weird capacities. And everyone's masked up and all that. But whatever, it's like people are used to that now. And so I will start doing, so like I'm kind of booking some stuff for the summer right now, but haven't played any shows in a year and a half.
What about those streaming things? Do you do those at all?
I was like, my manager was pushing me to like the whole pandemic, but I'm just super like, I don't really like social media that much. And I know that it's important to be a part of. And so like, I do like, I have to like push myself to do it. I really, really am put off by the idea of live streams. And on top of that, and maybe it's because I like follow so many musicians, but I just felt like for the last 9 months, my streams were just constantly
listen to
my live stream. Listen to my live stream. And I'm like, no, I don't want to be a part of that.
Right.
But then I finally did my first one like 3 weeks ago. But it was cool because one of my friends let me do it at her house, and she had two friends over. My husband was there and this other girlfriend of mine. So it was like, I kind of felt like I was playing to a small group of people still, which felt more natural to me. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't terrible, but I really am probably not going to do a ton of those. I just like wait until I'm touring again.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Elise. I really appreciate your time. This has been great.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I have one more question for you. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
To not try to follow trends, not try to write music because you think someone else would like it, and to try to ignore the voices in your head that we all can have of wondering if other people will like it, and really try to find and nurture what is the thing that is in your head authentically you.